Okay, the meeting will come to order. First bill on the agenda is House File 169, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill,
you want to move your bill?
I would like to move the bill in for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Representative Rukavina moves House File 169 for possible consideration in the committee report. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this bill passed last year. The year before, I didn't get a hearing on it, but it passed on the floor unanimously. And somehow, during the conference committee and everything else went on last summer, it didn't make it in the final bill. And so I appreciate the opportunity to be here again. It, as you can see, it's a savings to the state. So basically what it does is exempts our veterans that have been severely injured in the line of duty. The state assumes there's about 3,735 fully disabled veterans in Minnesota, and that about 75% of them are homeowners, or about 2,800 homeowners would do that, would be able to qualify for this. It would get rid, I think, of the way I drafted it originally, of a subcategory right now in our property tax laws. And it would save the state, because of circuit breaker payments, about $1.1 million a year. I don't know, Ms. Baker, is there an updated version? I saw that. Is it up to 12 or 1.2 million a year, Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, the updated version is now about 1.7.
Oh, so it's even more money. Mr. Chair, could I spend that 1.7?
We can talk about that later.
But I'm sure that the veterans that have showed up today to support this bill, unsolicited, I might add, but they have seen it. And I've been getting calls and emails from around the state are very supportive of this. So with that, Mr. Chair, I don't think we need to take up any more of the committee.
Probably not. This was in our group. This passed the House last year, Representative Rukavina? Not this version. What's the difference between the one we passed last year and this one, do you know?
Nothing, other than an updated version on the circuit breaker savings to the state. I don't believe there's any difference.
Okay, yeah. Certainly you have a witness, Representative Rukavina?
I think there's some concerns by Mr. Kua on the assessors, but that's on the next bill. On this bill? Oh, come on, I want to hear what you're saying. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and members. Very briefly, just a comment regarding this one. It's on the same theme as another bill that you'll be hearing this morning as well, dealing with disabled veterans. And just from an assessor's point of view, by the way, my name is Pete Kuhak from Cass County, representing the assessor's organization in Minnesota.
Okay.
And we just want to point out that this particular bill is much more straightforward, simpler, easier to administer than the other bill that you'll be hearing regarding disability issues. We would, if something is going to be passed in this fashion, we would certainly recommend that this is the bill that should be seriously considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kua. Anyone else care to testify for or against House File 169? Yes. Okay. Representative Rukavina, staff is telling me that the version we passed last year had an overall cap. Does this have one in it?
Mr. Chair, I didn't have the bill redrafted, so I'm assuming I'm just passing 169 as was last year. Mr. Hines maybe can help me, but I didn't. The bill was referred back to committee, and I didn't introduce a new jacket.
Mr. Chairman, just to point out that the measure that was included in the omnibus tax bill in the House had a $200,000 limit on it.
That was added by the chair, Mr. Craig, I remember that.
Yes. Okay. So it wasn't a full exemption. It was a full exemption up to $200,000, otherwise $200,000.
But this is back the way it was originally. Okay. All right. With that, Chair will lay over House File 169 for possible inclusion in the committee report, and the next bill we'll take up is House File 3455, Representative Rukavina. Moves House File 3455 for possible inclusion in the House or in the subcommittee report. Representative Trevino, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I had a constituent call me from up near Tower whose son is, I believe, will be going to Iraq in the next 2 weeks. And what happened is that he works in the building trades down here in Minneapolis, and he was going to buy a house. And but because he was going to Iraq, he was going to let the people that were actually in the house stay there until he got back. And the Department of Revenue told him, or somebody, I think the local assessor, or someone told him, maybe it was the assessor, someone he asked in the assessor's office, that he couldn't apply for a homestead because he never lived in the house. Now, in current state law, as you can see in the bill,
This is because he was out fighting wars?
Because he was going to go and fight a war.
Yeah. Okay.
But as you can see in current state law, they do compensate our veterans for that. But you actually have had to have occupied the house. And because he told them that he was going to buy the house, but he wasn't actually going to live in it, because then he would have had to find somebody to take care of it and move back in, that he was just going to let those people stay in there until he got back from Iraq. And Representative Lesch can relate to this, but anyway, anyway, when they told him, and somebody in Hamilton County said, you don't qualify for a homestead credit, you can't even apply. So what this bill does, with Ms. Baker's help, I think, and I think maybe I got this language from Senator Box, I don't know if it's exactly like Kara drafted it, but it supposedly accomplishes this with that B subdivision.
So, Representative Rubino, this would just say that
if you buy a house, Mr. Chair and members, but you're going immediately overseas to fight a war or, you know, whatever, and you're in the armed service and you're on active duty and you can't stay in Minnesota, that you can make the application for the homestead, and once you come back, you've met your qualification, or however that was, Mr. Pula would know. And then when you come back to Minnesota and live in that house, you're going to get the homestead credits.
Okay, so while they're gone, they could keep their house homestead. Does it do that?
Well, in the case of this gentleman, he's going to be gone. There's always a Mr. Hines or Ms. Baker can correct me, but you buy a house, you got to wait till the next year tax is payable to qualify for the homestead, because you're always a year behind. So what this would do is, while he was gone, they'll say he was living in the house when he comes back, and he met his year, right?
So he'll have the same eligibility anybody else would who actually lived there. Okay. Any questions from members?
Mr. Chair, members, I think Mr. Kuha, the assessor, has a little bit of a concern about my bill, and maybe if we listen to him, he can fix it up a little bit, because he did come to my office the other day, and Mr. Kuha, by the way, is a Finn, and I think one of his relatives, this is my favorite Finn name. We had a gas station right down the street from me with two Finn guys owned it. One of them was his relative, and the name of the gas station was Kuha and Vainyampa. So I always love that name, and when I see him all the time, I always say Kuha. He's going to fix my bill up.
Mr. Kuha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Rukavina. Once again, for the record, my name is Steve Kuha, Cass County Assessor, here representing the Assessor's Organization. And as Representative Rukavina did mention, we visited with him last week regarding the language in House File 3455. We understand the intent, and it's fine. There's no problem from our perspective regarding the intent. Our only concern is that it's going to be very difficult to administer. And the best way to explain that is to give you an example. Okay. For example, if this bill were to pass the way it is, we could have an individual who maybe is stationed in Georgia, career military person, looking at retirement from the military in 3 to 5 years, from Minnesota originally, domiciled, a resident of Minnesota legally, but stationed in Georgia in this particular example. Desiring to move back to Minnesota after he retires in 5 years and wants to go back up to a lake, mm-hmm. Lake Vermilion in this particular case. And so this bill is in law, and they contact us and say it's our intent to move into this property that we've just purchased on Lake Vermilion when we retire, when he and his spouse retires. And now we would give them homestead under this provision. Now, 5 years goes by, and he decides, you know, Minnesota is an awfully cold place to be. I kind of like it down here in Georgia. I'm not going to move to Minnesota. But he still owns the property on the lake up there. Now, we don't know when he's going to retire. We don't track retirement records of military. So we don't know when he retired, and we're not going to know that he didn't actually move when he did retire. So he stays in Georgia, and he's there, and we're continuing on giving homestead to this property forever and ever when it's rented or occupied by somebody else, or maybe just used seasonally by him when he comes up here in the summer months. So there's that open-endedness that's of concern to us. We need to have some opportunity. One of the suggestions that we visited about with Representative Rukavina is, and certainly if someone would care to amend it or carry this forward, one proposal we would consider is not granting the homestead to the individual until they actually do retire or move into the property. They don't move back in because they haven't been there to begin with. So if they move into the property and apply, maybe put a provision in here that they would be granted 2 or 3 years worth of abatements, property tax, changing it to a homestead classification for current year plus 2, which we can do right now. And that would at least give them 3 years worth of homestead benefits after they've actually moved into the property. A suggestion.
Representative Camino.
Mr. Chair, you know, I can understand. I'm certainly not intending for this that somebody that never, you know, moved to Georgia and became a career soldier to speculate on property on Lake Vermilion and not have to pay taxes on it. That's not the intent of this. So if we can work with staff and Mr. Kuha and maybe get some suggestions from veteran organizations on how to do this, I'm more than willing to do it. But in my particular instance, I thought that the Department of Revenue's interpretation of this was pretty strange, because here's a kid that's going to go to Iraq that couldn't apply for homestead because he was never actually going to live in the house.
Well, we have seen strange from the Department of Revenue before.
Maybe Ms. Baker has a suggestion. She's looking at you quizzically.
Well, let's... Ms. Baker.
Chair, Representative Rukavina, I don't have the language worked up right now, but what we might be able to do is what you wanted to do is limit it just to those veterans that actually go to war. We could, you know, in active service or in, and I'm not sure exactly what terms that we have to use, but so that it's not that they are just stationed, you know, in the United States, but they actually are going over to Iraq or to wherever war. The other thing is to put a time certain to say it's like 2 years, because the chances are those persons would be back within that time period. And so, you know, and I don't know if that's limiting it too much or if that's...
See, that, Mr. Chair, members, that's the problem, because given the current status of this war, we're having people that are just being told that they got to keep stationed over there. And you also have the, and I'm thinking about this, that we talked about some of these things, but, you know, somebody could be called up for, that could be a reservist like this kid was, and then they have to go to basic, and maybe they're there for quite a while, and maybe they get shipped somewhere else, and maybe they haven't actually go overseas, but they were supposed to. And I'd like them to be covered, too. So we'll think about how to do it, Mr. Chair, because he does bring up some legitimate concerns, and maybe the best way is to have a actual 2 or 3 year limit or something.
I guess I have a question. If somebody is, say they enlist and they own a house, and then they're stationed in Georgia, and they're there for 2 years, do they keep their homestead?
Under this law, because they lived in the house.
Under this law, but currently.
No, currently. Under current law, they're covered, if I understand it right, under subdivision 12A, because they lived in the house. The problem with this kid is he was going to buy the house, and he was going to let the people that owned the house stay there until he got back from
gets back to me this week.
Okay, so you're going to work on that with
Thank you.
Would anyone else care to testify for or against House File?
Thank you.
3455. Any questions from members? Seeing none, the chair will lay over House File 3855 for possible inclusion in the committee report. Okay, next bill we'll take up is House File 2857, Representative Eastland.
I'm moving to Mr. Chairman.
Representative Charles, I saw you, but I didn't see you. And are you in a? Are you okay with waiting a minute? Or?
I'm good. I don't have the full text.
Okay. So you're okay with?
This is better than meeting.
As always, Representative Nelson.
I move about 2857, and I would presume the author wants the A1 amendment added on.
Okay, Representative Nelson moves House File 2857 for possible inclusion in the committee report.
And I'll move the A1 amendment to that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Nelson moves the A1 amendment. I assume this is to get the bill in the shape you wanted in, Representative Eastland?
Yeah, there was one thing that I got put in there when I had it drafted that I didn't want, but I wanted to get it dumped in. So
okay. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a bill that was brought to me by one of my constituents. It's an issue that I know we've wrestled with here a lot. Is how can we do some of the things we'd like to do for veterans and keep the costs, state costs, at least under control, and not have those be skyrocketing. So this was an idea that a constituent of mine brought to me, which basically what it does. It's a benefit. It's a property tax benefit for disabled veterans, and it applies to veterans that are disabled either 50%, 75%, or 100%. Those would be the three categories, and that would be certified through VA. And what it does is it allows for a valuation credit on their property tax. So, but what actually occurs here is the value of their property that is taxed actually is lowered. And so the tax that they actually are assessed is a little bit less. The net effect is that the property value for the whole taxing jurisdiction is reduced slightly, and so the levy then would just be spread over a few less dollars, and all the neighbors and all the other property owners in the community would be picking up a very, very slight increase, a penny or two per thousand probably is what it would end up to be. And it would be at no cost actually to the state of Minnesota, but it would be neighbors helping the veterans that they live next to and are close to. So that's really the essence of the bill. What it does is if you're 50% or more disabled, you get a $30,000 market exclusion off of your property tax or property value. If you're 75% or more disabled, you get a $50,000 credit off of your market value. And if you're 100% disabled, you get $100,000 $100,000 credit off your market value. That's really the essence of the bill, sir.
Okay, thank you, Representative Eastland. Representative Seaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eastland, it's a great bill, and I support it. I just wanted to make sure that you
Representative Eastland.
I think it includes anyone that who the description here is, I can find it. Anybody that has a service-connected disability. If a National Guard person is put into ordered to go into a combat zone and has a service-connected disability, they would apply to them.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Clem Chesney.
Thank you, Chairman Vander.
What is that buzz, by the way? Is that a...
No, I think it's the microphone system. But the issue Representative Stephen just brought up, we had an amendment in taxes yesterday to fix that language in the governor's bill as well, and We had some discussion about that. In my understanding, maybe staff could tell us, all of these bills on the calendar today that are related to the military, Representative Stephen is right, they don't explicitly include the National Guard, and I think Ms. Manzi had told me that we needed language on each of them, and I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to incorporate them. I'm just looking because I think I have them, but maybe Ms. Manzi can tell us if it's needed.
Mr. Chair, representatives and esteemed members of the committee, the language that needs to be added to the National Guard relates to the military pension exclusions that are proposed. There are several bills that do that. This language, I would have to look into the definition of veteran included in this language, but my assumption is that a person who is discharged with a service-connected disability from the Guard would be discharged through the same process as members of the regular military. And as I said, I haven't researched it, so we need to follow up on it a little bit to verify that. But that seems to match with Representative Eastland's understanding. And we can follow up on that and let you know.
And if that needs to be changed, that's fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience? Well, before we do that, Representative Simpson would move the adoption of the minutes from March 23rd, 2006 meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Testifiers for or against House File 2857. Come up to the table, please, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Marty Schmidt. I'm the Collin County Assessor. I'm here representing the assessors of the state of Minnesota. We basically support the concept of the bill. We'd like to point out that administratively that this would be fairly difficult to do. We're more in support of Mr. Rukavina's bill, House File 169, I believe that's the right number, in which it gives them 100% a lot more benefit than this bill would. So in this respect, we're looking more towards Mr. Representative Ravina's bill versus this one.
So your feeling is that the administration of the that would result from this would be a lot more?
Yes, it would. It's anything to deal with percentages and who makes that determination and trying to keep track of that becomes an issue for us.
Representative Eason?
Mr. Chair and members, we looked around in the country to see if anybody else was using this concept, but I believe it was North Dakota and Texas both do something similar. And the information we got was that it was a relatively simple procedure. If you are 100% disabled, you need to validate that once to the county assessor with a statement from the VA, and it remains in place for life. If you are less than 100% disabled, you need to fill out that information every year, and it needs to be processed at the county level. I think, according to my numbers, there are around 13,000 veterans in the state currently that would qualify for this benefit. So that's the number that we're talking about, distributed among how many, 80-some counties. We don't think that this would create a huge burden on counties that is not something they could manage inside of their current staff.
I think it. Could you just describe the administrative difficulty a little bit more?
We'd have to flag these properties and keep track of which one is 75%, which one's 50%, or whatever any other percentage they're involving. It'd be ongoing, from the time they own the property until that property is no longer owned from, or they're not there at the property anymore. So it's a matter of a tracking system that we'd have to set up, keep track of. for the lifetime of that property owner, basically. Another possible suggestion would be is that maybe we can do use an avenue such as a property tax refund avenue versus assessment avenue.
Thank you. Representatives,
huh? Hey, Mr. Chair and committee members, that was one of the issues that we struggled with, because when it gets to be a refund of the taxes, then it becomes a fairly significant cost to the state. We just felt like it would be much easier to take it off the assessed valuation of the property, and that it would remain pre-tax and would not show up as a cost to the state.
So you'd rather put the cost on the local government?
The cost is not on anybody. The cost is on all the taxpayers. That's who it's on. It's not coming out of anybody's pocket. It's just a slightly larger assessment, which would be very, very small, that would allow for that reduction in costs.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brad.
Just in regards to the PTR, or that option, it seems to me that would be have to be requested by that veteran, whereas the approach that Representative Eastland is taking is something that would then occur every year without them requesting it every year. And so it seems to me that if your goal is to help veterans in a manner that is both helpful and easy for them, that it would make more sense to have them do something once as opposed to continually do it or request the refund every year. So I just want to point that out, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, could I comment on that?
Yes.
I think there was some information that was in the a bill summary that was not correct. If you are less than 100% disabled, you would have to request this credit every year at the county level, because that can change over time. Your disability can change over time, so it has to be certified by the VA, requested every year.
Mr. Chairman, just as we're comparing the Rukavina 169 versus the Eastland 2857. My understanding is that the 169, you need to be 100% disabled, and I think that Representative Eastland's 2857 allows for veterans that are anything less than 100% disabled to qualify for some property tax relief. And I think that it's pretty incumbent on us to recognize that somebody could be 75% or 50% disabled, and those veterans in all likelihood would also be working and contributing when they're not 100% disabled. And I think we still want to recognize the level of sacrifice that they made. You know, every one of them gave something, and I think we need to recognize that.
So in practicality, the veteran would just notify send their disability note or certification that the state provides them to the assessor, and then they would just make the adjustment on the property. Is that,
Mr. Chair? That is correct.
Representative
Eastland. One other comment I would say to an earlier question. Really, the essence of this bill and what Representative Nelson identified here was to really address the guard type of a veteran. Because so many people are taken out of midlife, they're married, they got kids, they got a job, they got a mortgage, they got all of those things established, and all of a sudden they're yanked out of that, sent off into a war zone to come back disabled. They've made a huge sacrifice, and those are the people particularly, and that's why the less than 100% disabled issue is even in here. I think we need to recognize the fact that they made a big sacrifice, and they're coming back to something that maybe they can't afford to live in anymore. And so it's important we recognize that and do what we can to help.
Just maybe a further comment. We discussed that the disability can be changing through the years. When the first change comes, whatever that might be, when they make the, who's going to be responsible for letting us know that change, that disability has changed from 75% to 25%?
The answer to that question is the reason why it's required to be requested every year. If you're less than 100% disabled, it's you have to provide that documentation from the VA every year. So automatically, every credit would be eliminated until a new notice is given each year.
Representative Eastland, one of the things that the assessors have been pretty successful in persuading the committee of is that changes in valuation are somewhat, I mean, they're a little more cumbersome than it might look on the face. And if there was a way, maybe you could work on that to not be dealing with the valuation, maybe some way to just deal with the tax amount, I think that might help the bill a little bit, because I think that makes it a little simpler. When you get into changing how they value things, they get a little bit jittery, and actually with good reason if you spent some time thinking about it. So, and want to spend some time talking to them as to why. Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can appreciate what you're saying. One thing that if we're going to go this route, and I agree that you should maybe look at another alternative, but if we're going to go this way, it just seems to me that in terms of requesting every year that the veteran send another certification in, it seems like an extra step that maybe is over and above what might be necessary. It seems to me that if there's no change, then you could just continue operating under the same disability rating. Chances are the rating is not going to be going down, but it'll be going up in terms of the percent disability. So it just seems to me that if you go from 50 to 75%, then they could come in and talk about a change or do that July 1st change. But to every year have them request something seems a little bit redundant, I guess. So I just encourage you to maybe take a look at that piece of it too. I want to make it work, but at the same time, make it workable for the veteran too.
Representative Eastland.
We did look at that, and I'm not sure that it is an accurate assumption that disabilities go up. I think with therapy and with lots of different things that people go through, disabilities can also go down.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other states that we looked at that do a similar procedure here all have a annual request that's submitted to the local taxing authority, and the response that I got was that works very well.
Okay. Any other questions? Any comments? Anyone else in the audience care to testify regarding this piece of legislation? See, none. Chair will lay over 2857 for possible inclusion in the committee report. Representative Garrow. Next bill on the agenda, we'll take up this House File 2718. Representative Winchesky moves House File 2718 for possible consideration in committee report.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a mistake in the Nina Manzi pointed out. Hi, welcome.
Where's the side?
Well, if you support it, we'll pass.
Would you like us to call the sergeant representative now?
Requesting combat military pay from the to exclude combat military pay from the definition of household income used in determining eligibility for the renter and homeowner property tax credit. So it would just limit it to the combat pay. Mr. Chairman and members, a constituent of mine whom I don't know came back from Iraq last year, and he found out that he was not eligible for his renter's credit because his combat pay was higher than what he was making locally. He called Tom Huntley and the staff down here, and Revenue Department was contacted, and they would have tried to help him out, but they couldn't because of our law. So, and I called him. He was really angry. He is pretty injured. And I told him we can't do anything until the next session, which is this year, unless there's a special session or something. I'll try to do it. I called him last week. His roommate answered. His roommate is in a wheelchair, and he said, "Wait a minute, you know, I'm going to go get him." Well, this was Paul Allred. I had to wait for a while because he was adjusting his prosthesis. Prosthesis meaning that he lost his leg or arm. I don't know. I didn't want to ask him. He didn't volunteer it. And his roommate that was sitting in the wheelchair was lamenting that he can't get much help from him. He was, you know, helping him out too. So anyway, it's a sad case, and I don't know if he's gonna go back. I don't know if this is gonna help him out, but because most likely he will not be sent back because he's injured. But I don't know what the extent of his injury is. He didn't volunteer it. But anyway, there are people that come back, and I know that people get more money in combat pay. When I was with the peacekeepers in Europe in Bosnia, I was a civilian in a uniform interpreting and translating. I was making twice as much as this job pays. So I was really rich. I was even thinking about becoming a Republican.
I was like, but you didn't think very long about that. Representative Yarles, what is, or maybe staff tell us, what is the income cutoff for eligibility? Do you know?
For rent, let's see, it has been going down because of because of the budget situation since the last few years. But I don't have that in front of me. I don't have the. I think it's based on the family income. And not number of the family, no. Maybe somebody from the revenue department has those figures.
I think, did you?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Yarrow, the maximum income for the renter property tax refund currently is around $45,000 of household income. And for the homeowner property tax refund is around $76,000 or $77,000 of household income. Those figures are adjusted annually for inflation. And once you put all your income together to calculate household income, you get to take a subtraction from that for, I think, the first five dependents in your household. And the amount you get to subtract for each dependent decreases as the number of dependents increases. Those are the maximum income
eligible. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't think he has. I think he's living alone with his roommate. I don't think he has.
Okay. Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against House File 2718?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I tried to get the Veterans Services people in Duluth, and they referred me to the state. And the director is on vacation, and Kathy Vitalis couldn't make it because she had another appointment with something else.
Okay.
They couldn't come.
You do have an A1 amendment, Representative Garland?
Yes.
Representative Lunchesky will move the A1 amendment to House File 2718, and this just puts the bill, makes it work better. Okay. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. All right. That chair will be over House File 2718 for possible inclusion in the committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
We'll see you.
Okay. Next goes House File 3882, and the chair will move House File 3882 for possible inclusion in the committee report. And this legislation is intended to provide some property tax relief to our VFWs, Legions, I believe some KC halls, nonprofit, charitable organizations that that operate in a way that the requirements, what the bill does is move them into a different tax classification, which will result in a lower property tax for these organizations. And the purpose of that is to recognize the fact that they are charitable, and one of the requirements is that they donate at least an amount equal to the property tax assessed on their buildings in any year in order to keep that classification. And that's House File 3882, and maybe we could, if Ms. Baker or Mr. Hines could tell us approximately what kind of a reduction we would be achieving for our veterans organizations, and approximately, and how we're doing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what this does is it moves this type of property owned by organizations that qualify by meeting the charitable contribution and donations criteria in here from Class 3A, which is the commercial class, into 4C. And what that does is Class 3A, the commercial class, pays the state general tax rate, and its class rate is 1.5% on the first 150 and then 2% on the excess over 150. By moving them into Class 4C, it'll just be a straight 1.5% and they won't pay the state general tax. So we're kind of guessing that it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% tax reduction, maybe a little bit more, but somewhere in that range. And on the second page of the summary, the contribution, charitable contributions and donations, it uses the same definition as the lawful gambling purposes under Section 349.12, excluding, you know, items such as taxes and assessments and fees and costs and utility payments. But the purpose of that was to make a very bright line so that when they give assessors this list of these are my contributions and these are the donations, that there is an actual laundry list of exactly what are contributions and donations like. And we've listed some of them on the sheet, like contributions to scholarship funds for defraying cost of education, contributions to individuals or families suffering from poverty, homelessness, physical, mental disability, treatment of delayed post-traumatic stress. I mean, there's, and it goes on and on, but it's very specific items that they can contribute to under the charitable gambling. And so this way there was an easier definition of what is a contribution and deduction, or and donation, I mean.
I think at this time I'd like to move the A2 amendment, which simplifies the certification a little more.
Yes.
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what the amendment does, and this is after Steve and I spent some time talking to the Department of Revenue, is one of the things it does is it puts all the onus on the organization to certify the information to the assessor so that the assessor does not have to worry about, other than you give me the listing of your contributions and your donations, and you tell me what they are and you list them out for me on an application that the commissioner can come up with a standard application form. And if in fact they don't equal the previous year's property taxes, they aren't going to qualify. I mean, it's just, it's going to be a very, you know, a much more cut and dried kind of thing than a lot of times the assessors have to make so many judgment calls, where this should be a much easier thing for them to do. and shouldn't have onus put on the assessor. The other thing that it does is it takes out the language in the bill that references that the building must be used or open for public and community meetings or events for no charge. The reason that was taken out, and that was at the department's discussion, was that you get into a real question as to how many times should it be open? Should it be open once or twice? Is there going to be a potential discrimination issue that they let somebody in but don't let somebody else in? And there gets to be a real question of who is it that they're going to let use the building, and that the real, this isn't to say that they shouldn't continue to let their building be used for these things, but that to qualify under this class, the only thing that's going to be under it is the charitable contributions and donations are going to be the factor that determines whether or not they are going to meet it.
Discussion to the amendment. Okay, all in favor of adoption of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment's adopted. Testifiers. Mr. Oaks, did you want to...
If you remember my name, I guess I have to say. I'm Tom Oaks. I'm the finance officer at Post 225 in Forest Lake, American Legion. And listening to this, what's been going on this morning, I understand the assessors would find that the part of the that he removes the with the amendment would be a real problem for them. Although we do have, for instance, in our Legion, we have a weekly or a daily, actually, a group of ministers meet together for a prayer meeting. And of course, we charge them nothing for the use of the room, and they bring blessing down on our building. Now, if you guys don't pass this thing, I'm going to put a word in with those people. So, anyway. We do have, right now, we do have a record of all our gambling donations, which goes to the state. The state has those records, and they're available to the public. Now, those records could be given to the assessors, if that's the way it would work. And those are, we also have a form at, was it 940? It's a federal form. It's a kind of informational return that we have to make out every year for the federal government.
And does that, Mr. Oaks, list all your charitable contributions?
No, it doesn't. Actually, the other form does that. But that does give most of the information that would be required.
We just felt you needed more forms to fill out.
Well, I think that 40 and as well as the gambling the gambling returns, the one that the state requires from us, from the gambling board, I think those two are not, would be enough to give them a pretty good idea of what's going on.
That's something maybe the... You know, we could look at, and then we wouldn't need a new one. Possibly, as long as it's real simple, and maybe we can ask the assessors to look at those and see if that would do it.
Well, anyway, those two things are available, and they're both public knowledge. So it would be, I think, usable. The other thing I'd like to bring up is the fact that what, for instance, our taxes, our property taxes on our land is... are $60,000 a year. We've contributed about approximately $150,000 to the community. Now, if we were to get a 30% reduction, that we would still give more money into the community itself, because that's where our monies go. You know, most of the members of our organization are grandparents, and consequently, we do a lot of work with the schools, with the children in the community, and the people that these veterans, it's a kind of a haven for most of them, over a sanctuary, and it's really be very difficult for us to maintain ourselves if we do not get some relief, mainly because a lot of our people are dying. We get one a week as a rule, and it's not going to get any better. The time may come when we may have to amalgamate with the VFWs and the legions and so forth to, you know, reduce our costs and so forth. That may come down the road, but right now I think something like this would really help us a lot, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness?
Okay.
Representative Nelson.
I didn't have a question.
Okay, would I...
But I would recommend that you renew your motion to adopt this and include this, Mr. Chairman.
I think if... Is there any other testifiers with Mr. Weiss or anyone you want to come up or... You don't have to.
We really don't have anything to add.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you for coming.
Well, thanks for coming.
Like I said, we have documentation, and this doesn't include donated hours. If we were going to include our donated hours for all the school presentations and work we do, it would be $10 million. And one of our parcels did, when I started working with Representative Vandiver 2-3 years ago on this, one of our parcels did go up. In taxes, 120%, so you don't need that.
Well, thank you. Anyone else in the audience?
Mr. Chair, members, Steve Kuhla, Cass County Assessor. I can speak to this from a couple of perspectives that might help. Not only am I obviously the assessor for many of these properties throughout Cass County, I'm also a veteran. I belong to American Legion. I turned out to be the gambling manager for Post 134 American Legion in Walker, so I understand exactly what some of the previous testimony.
I knew there was a reason we liked you.
The Form CD, which is a monthly return that gambling organizations have to submit to the state, identifies specifically, item by item, the contributions given and the dollar amounts, the membership minutes, are covered in there, so that everything's on the up and up, the membership approval dates, and where the contributions go and the amount. So it would not be a difficult matter to identify and for gambling organizations to share that public information with the assessor to identify the level of contributions. From that perspective, I don't think there'd be any problem at all. In discussing the bill itself and the impact with my colleagues, assessor colleagues, we wouldn't oppose this bill in any fashion as well.
Mr. Kuhat, would the do you know whether, or have a thought on whether all of the organizations that might qualify, like the KC Halls, would they fill out the same form you're talking about?
As the chair members, yes, it's required by law, and it's a monthly report that has to be complied with.
That's something that we could consider. Thank you. Any other comments? Sir?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I've been the club administrator at the American Legion Forest Lake for about 1 year. Before that, I've had 26 years of financial background with Lutheran Brotherhood Insurance and in their legal department. I'm just temporarily helping the American Legion out for for a period of time to get things in order for their finances. During my last year being involved with the American Legion, I have seen so much dedication at the organization, not just the Legion, but the VFWs. When I first started going through their financial statements, I realized the amount of contributions and time that they have been putting into the churches, into the communities, and into the families of where we live. And then I look at their financial statements and I see, you know, the amount of monies that they are spending, you know, giving out for taxes and all of this, all of these events. And so I find myself in full support of you know, creating some tax code for these charitable organizations that can help our community. Each day, I know the VFW and the Legion in Forest Lake gives out our halls for non-charitable organizations so they can hold meetings. And we provide coffee, we provide food, we provide all kinds of opportunities for other nonprofits in our community. And so I just wanted to step forward to let you know that coming from the financial point of the organizations, I think this is a step that really needs to be taken. This is one small piece to the puzzle that both Legions and VFWs need to review and need to make changes. So thank you for your time.
Could you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Jim Fromm, F-R-O-M-M, and I'm the club administrator. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Anyone else?
Committee. My name is Keith Hagstrom. I am a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Forest Lake, Minnesota. And I want to thank you for even considering such a thing. We struggle most of the time from year to year, and when property taxes climb up to a point where we start whining, we usually go to the city and whine a little bit, and they'll cut us a little slack. But this is great. This is wonderful. When you see the gentleman out on the street selling poppies and the ladies out in the street selling poppies, that goes into the post coffers. But that is another part of, we have charitable gambling, but we also have our own. And all the poppy funds go into what we call a relief fund. And that's for any veteran coming back from Iraq or any veteran that needs help. So we're not only using, we're using all of our availability of funds to help all veterans. And I just wanted to let you know that that's exactly what we do. And the American Legion and the VFW and Forest Lake work together all the time and in supporting the veterans in our community. And we would like to have more money to bring to our schools, because our schools are the ones that are really hurting now. They're losing a lot of money one way or another, and so we're trying to give them more money, but it's hard to do when you're pretty much limited to what you can do. So I'd like to thank you all very much for supporting the veterans, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Thanks for your help. Anyone else? Okay, with that, the chair will lay over House File 3882 for possible inclusion in a committee report. And we are adjourned.